Hello and welcome to edition 275 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. The countdown to 300 podcasts is on. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. And we are here with our 2021 season preview. See what I did there? Grand Prix preview. You'll see the pun when it's written down. I am Richard Baxter, hosting once again. And with me tonight, we have a bumper panel. We have blogger and the man Hamilton fans love to hate at times, Dan's brother, Callum Springle, is here.
Good evening.
Good evening. Joining us, as we've got Callum, we thought we may as well get the other one, Norfolk's next top F1 engineer, Dan, is also here with us.
Hello.
And also joining us is motoring journalist David Tillier.
Good evening. How are you doing?
All good, yeah. How are you guys all keeping well?
Good.
Obviously, we are once again recording from our own homes because we're still coming out of lockdown in the UK. But I think it's only about a week away, and we can meet six people outside. So, up to six people outside, I think it is, something like that. Got to check the rules. But
do you have six friends?
That was the problem, really, wasn't it?
Well, for podcast recording purposes, we've got a pretty good crew. So,
because if you've got any spare, I need some.
Well, I like to think of all our listeners as our friends. That's so cheesy, isn't it? Yeah. I don't know about that, but yeah, hopefully we can actually get together and do it in person again soon, and maybe sit in a garden somewhere and get back to the old ways. We're not too far away. But yeah, we are here with our season preview. So I think we may as well jump straight into it. And we may as well start, because we're a week or so on from when testing finished. We might as well just have a quick kind of look over testing. Kind of the big headlines coming from it really seem to be talking about Mercedes. Do you think they're in trouble? Dan, what would you say as someone who's currently involved somewhat with a Formula One team, shall we say? What's your take on it all?
Well, they seem to be a wounded giant, let's say. Although Bahrain is one type of circuit that we'll visit over the year. So it's a case of not reading too much into what we see. It seems that they are quite rear limited on a rear limited track. In other words, they seem to not be able to really get the rear to stick, and that seems to have caught them out. Whether that's their aero concept or anything thereafter, it's up for debate. But yeah, we could very well be set for a nice title fight between Red Bull and Mercedes at this rate.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, obviously, Red Bull caught the headlines really for the opposite reasons, for looking so good. DT, what do you think? Are they going to be as good as we expect? Or
it's always a really difficult one to call. But I think this year I find it even harder, because we've just had that one session, or 3 days, but one track that we don't normally go to all that often. It is a relatively unique track, and I don't know whether or not it's representative. I mean, testing is not necessarily always representative anyway, but I think this testing might even be less representative than what we're used to. So it's really hard to call sort of who's there or thereabouts. You've got people like Tsunoda who's banging in awesome, consistent, fantastic laps, but do we think AlphaTauri are going to be near the top? Probably not. So I don't really know. I have even less of an idea this year of where we stand from a sort of a team ranking point of view than any year before.
Yeah, definitely. And Callum, obviously, DT mentioned about the 3 days of testing it have had so far. Do you think that's going to impact the teams massively? Do you think it's going to make the season more unpredictable? Or how do you think it will affect things?
I suppose it's an even playing field for everybody, because everyone's got to deal with only having 3 days rather than 2 or 3 4-day tests like there's been in the last few years. And everyone's got the same, pretty much the same amount of data same amount of running over this preseason as everyone they're competing against. So as long as you've got an even chance to run through whatever your program is over those days, then it's, you know, I don't really see any difference between having one test or two or three.
And obviously a couple of the other teams within the kind of, they used to be the front running team, shall we say, and I'm going to come to you first with this, DT. Ferrari and McLaren obviously running Mercedes engines this year. Do you think they can get back in the battle for the podium places?
I don't see any reason why not. I mean, they were strong last year, if a little inconsistent at times, maybe sort of mid-season especially, they were sort of a bit more inconsistent, but obviously had enough consistency over the course of the year to snatch that third place at the end. I think they seem, from my point of view, McLaren seem to be in the best place they've been from a team point of view in a long, long time. McLaren for a few years have seemed a bit at odds with each other. They don't really know, I don't feel like they know what they're doing and what kind of team they are, whereas now under Zak Brown, with the drivers they've got, I think they just seem comfortable, which I think then allows them to get on with the business of racing. Last year's car was a fairly solid car. Obviously they've now got a better engine, which they seem to have implemented pretty well, and they had a fairly faultless testing session. So I don't see any reason why they can't get in amongst it. I don't think they're going to be a top two team, though, but I think they're certainly going to be able to challenge from race to race.
Hope so. It'd be nice to see the McLarens back up there on the podiums more. They had a couple of podiums last year, but you know, more consistent, that'd be great for the sport, I think. And Dan and Callum, what do you think as well? Do you think we could see these old, you know, Ferrari even, maybe? They've got obviously Carlos Sainz joining them this year instead of Vettel. A few little aero changes to the cars. You'd hope they've improved the engine. Do you think they can get up there as well?
Well, I mean, in my honest opinion, I think McLaren have got the best chance than Ferrari. From what I've heard and read, Ferrari have only managed to recover about 20 horsepower, which puts them arguably equal third with Renault. So the way their car has been designed from last year certainly appears that they've designed the car with a lot of power in mind, so therefore they've gone with a much more draggy downforce car. And they're paying the price for that because they've just not got the power. They can't punch it through the air. So I honestly can't see Ferrari getting it together this year. I personally think they should focus on next year, but I would like to be proven wrong. Let's get more teams up the front.
Yeah.
But from McLaren's point of view, you really have to think they've got to cash in this year. I personally think they have another really good opportunity at getting third in the constructors. Maybe even fight for podiums on a more regular basis, as we've already said. That Mercedes engine in the back of it seems to be running quite smoothly, despite the fact that Aston and Mercedes themselves have not been without issues. So, I mean, big credit to McLaren. They've managed to, within their two token spend, get a new engine in the car and fit it to their existing hardware, which is no mean feat. So yeah, it's all looking quite good for McLaren, I think.
Yeah, let's hope so.
I suppose, to be fair to Ferrari, you'd have to wonder whether or not what Mikasano said about them having a fuel flow restriction last year for all of their cars was true or not. I mean, I wouldn't call myself a conspiracy theorist personally, but I suppose if they're having that hypothetical fuel flow restrictor removed, and they're making a 20 horsepower gain on top of that, then they might be in a half decent position. But looking at testing, I would be surprised if that's actually the case, and if Ferrari are going to make bigger gains than everyone they were in the midfield with last season. So based on that, and considering that I personally would say that Ricciardo's an upgrade on Sainz, I wouldn't be able to look past anyone other than McLaren to be third in the Constructors again.
Interesting. Well, time will tell. And we need to mention one other team here, just quickly. Alpine, who are obviously, they were Renault last year, this year they're Alpine. I have to keep remembering it's Alpine and not Alpine. so the way it's spelled, but you know, now we have to say that car, that's a big boy. I don't know if you've seen the kind of the top of the car where the airbox is. That's been on steroids or something, hasn't it?
It's thick.
Thick.
Spelled double C.
Yeah.
That's the best way to describe it. And I gather they just moved some engine parts around up higher to make it so that the rear was narrower, so they had more floor space.
Yeah, I think they narrowed the side pods, didn't they, to sort of make it a little bit slimmer. But
yeah,
if you look at the 2020 Renault, that was quite thick in itself at the top. So it's, I think, the new livery plus the extra bit of girth that they've added has certainly exacerbated that the way that it looks.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
it's certainly a unique solution, isn't it? There's no one else that's quite gone with that style of engine cover, and they clearly seem very confident in their simulations and their analysis that the increase in centre of gravity height is well and truly offset by any extra downforce they can generate, and I would also argue the stability of that downforce as well. So yeah, they seem very bullish about that concept, don't they?
It'd be interesting to know actually how much higher that centre of gravity is, you know, to quite literally draw a line down the vehicle, you know, how physically higher is that centre of gravity.
Well, I mean, it looks to me like they've shifted about some of the radiators, and I know from experience radiators are fairly light. They tend to be made out of aluminium.
Yeah.
So it's probably going to be reasonably marginal, but it depends exactly what they've had to move up there.
Yeah. I can't imagine it's that bigger change for them. And if their aero package is benefited by having a much tighter package down below. That sounds weird. then it's got to be worth a go, hasn't it?
Definitely. We're talking about girth and small packages down below. So this podcast has changed in a different direction.
This is a PG-rated podcast.
So
I promise.
It may well be. So yeah, innocent minds, people. But no, everyone, please do get in touch and let us know your thoughts and expectations for the season ahead. There are many ways to get in touch with us here at the NRF1 podcast. The best place to start is patreon.com/NRF1. That's patreon.com/NRF1. Here you will find usually the full edition of the podcast, which will include our Of the Weekend Awards, the Norfolk Notebook, and the NRF1 Pit Stops. As this is a season preview, we're doing it in a slightly different format. So there's no Patreon podcast this week, but they will be as usual for the Grand Prix reviews that we do. Get in touch with us on social media as well. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. The handle for all three is at the NRF1, and you can email us as well. The email address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Continuing on with our season preview, we need to talk about the battle of the rookies. So there's three new drivers on the grid this year, all from F2. We have Mick Schumacher, Nikita Mazepin, and Yuki Tsunoda, who's already had a little mention. So, DT, what do you think we can expect from these guys? How do you think they're going to perform? What do you think they can achieve? And who do you think will come out on top?
Well, I'll stay from the off that Yuki Tsunoda is already my favourite. but head and shoulders, just because he's funny. I can't remember the exact tweet he put out, but there was a picture of him when they launched the AlphaTauri. There was a picture of him sitting in the car, and obviously he's small even by Formula One standards, and they're mostly all sort of jockey size anyway.
Really tiny, isn't he?
Yeah, and there was something along the lines of like, "What are you wishing for?" And it just his caption was "grow" or something to that effect. So he's already sort of he comes across as a bit of a character, which I think F1 definitely needs characters. You know, we like the teams, we like the cars, we like the racing, but we also like to support the people, and personality is important, I think. You know, would we all love Ricardo as much if he wasn't such of a cheeky chap, you know? So yeah, so he's already sort of winning from that point of view. But I also think he's winning from the point of view of what seat he's in. I don't think that either Schumacher or Mazepin have an opportunity to show any kind of skill or class in that car, because they're going to be at the back. They've already got a car that they've not spent any development tokens on dealing with. It was a pretty crap car last year. It's going to be fairly crappy this year, we expect. Maybe a slight improvement because of the Ferrari improvements, but ultimately they've already admitted that they're not going to be fighting for anything. So this is really a sort of a development year for the drivers and a stagnation for the team. So they're just going to get a little bit of F1 under their belt. So I don't think they're going to have the opportunity to sort of sell themselves to the fan base, certainly not until next year. So I think whatever happens, Yuki Tsunoda is going to come out on top.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think the Haas looks like it's going to have a difficult season again. But it's nice to see. I don't know if you guys saw it in the test sessions, but they had the MSC abbreviation for Mick Schumacher, which was obviously the same as his dad had when he was racing. It was quite nice to see that back on the screen, and a bit of a throwback as well.
Well, last year he was using in practice sessions SCH, wasn't he? And certainly made me a little bit teary-eyed when you see the MSC pop back up, because we've probably not seen that for the best part of 10 years.
Yeah, it's pretty much been that, hasn't it? Because 2012 was Schumacher's last season at Mercedes, wasn't it? Because 13, obviously, Hamilton went there. So it's not far off 10 years since we've last seen that, so that's quite incredible. But what about you, Callum? Who do you think will come out on top of those three rookies?
Well, in terms of the equipment that they're being given and the potential that they've got, Tsunoda is quite an easy choice in terms of who's going to come out in the driver's standings. Obviously, I suppose he who shall not be named will quite firmly remain the least popular driver, and I don't think he'll really do anything on track or off it to improve his standing at all with anyone who's not an arsehole, I suppose. But yeah, it doesn't really seem like a contest to me between any of the rookies. So I really wouldn't be at all surprised if Schumacher is not way ahead of Mazepin. But I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out on top of those two. And I wouldn't be at all surprised either to see Tsunoda going sort of from strength to strength as the season goes on with the AlphaTauri.
It would definitely be interesting. And I can't remember, there was an F2 race last year where I think Mazepin, he basically did some heavy defending and forced people off track. And I think Tsunoda won the race in the end. It might have been at Spa, thinking about it.
I think it was actually Bahrain outer circuit, wasn't it?
I think it was
shoving
both.
People up against the pit wall.
I think he got two penalties in the Sakhir, one of the Sakhir races. But Spa was when Mazepin, I think, crossed the line first and then got the penalty and came into the pit lane and basically punted the second place board at Tsunoda when he was celebrating.
Yeah, he nearly hit him with it, didn't he? I remember that.
The one thing I've heard about Tsunoda that apparently is supposed to be really good about him is that he is very mouldable. So if he goes and does a load of laps and he comes in and speaks to his engineer and the engineer says you can break another 50 metres later than you are, he'll go, okay. And he'll just go out and he'll break 50 metres later. He has, no issue with just accepting what he's told and just going out and doing it. So it's not like he has to kind of build, work himself up to that kind of pace. He's very quick at getting up to speed because he'll just do what the data is telling him.
That's quite interesting.
I mean, it's a trait in some ways.
Oh yeah, it'll either win you races or it'll put you into a tire wall. Either way, it's certainly fun.
For the viewer, yeah, definitely. But there's also the other interesting sort of side fact to that. If you're that sort of driver, the other obvious example is Max Verstappen, who is very well known for being able to drive around any sort of problem the car is giving him, i.e. the 2020 Red Bull. And a more mortal driver, for example, Pierre Gasly or Alex Albon, can't deal with that. And that kind of sends you down a rabbit hole of car development. So whilst that is a benefit, to be able to actually drive around those sorts of problems in the long run, you probably don't want that sort of driver, or even worse, two of those sorts of drivers in your team.
Certainly not two of them. That does make car development, I suspect. We certainly wouldn't be a driver-led car development, which is, as we know, especially with certain drivers in certain teams, having a strong driver that could help elevate a car beyond what it currently is very, very important.
Definitely, yeah.
No, it's interesting stuff. This is why we value you guys, because you think outside of the box to some of us, some of the others, including by some of the others, I mean myself. Awesome. And I think we need to also talk about some of the other news that's obviously coming out of Formula One in recent weeks. George Russell, Norfolk's own George Russell, he has taken over from Romain Grosjean as one of the directors of the Grand Prix Drivers Association. So that's quite nice for him. So you'd hope that he'd have a long career and a long future with Formula One, so he's there for many years. I believe Vettel is one of the others, one of the other directors. So he's in good company there, I think. And we had a little discussion about this before we started recording, but we might as well do it on the live pod as well. But Drive to Survive Season 3 was obviously released last week, I think it was. I think we've all been watching it. What have you guys made of it? You enjoyed it so far?
Something a little bit different for the hardcore fan. I mean, you have to kind of, as the so-called hardcore fan, you do have to kind of overcome some of the staging of things, like drivers saying, "Oh, I need to focus now," and they're literally about to start the race. Lights are just about to go out. Don't think that would ever happen in reality, but it probably does quite a good job of dramatising the whole spectacle for the casual viewer or for someone who's new to Formula One. But I quite like the extra layer of behind the scenes that you would never normally see, just because you don't have the access to that. So you have to kind of take the rough with the smooth, and obviously they do gloss over a few things, but I think generally it's a good bit of entertainment.
Yeah, I think that seems the general kind of consensus from it, is that there's quite a bit they've glossed over, but you can kind of forgive them with the fact they're kind of making an entertainment show. But it's still a good watch, I thought. Callum, have you been watching it as well?
I've not finished it yet.
Yeah.
But I can quite understand the whole sentiment behind overlooking a lot of things or overdoing others and completely mitigating certain factors. Because in one of the more recent episodes I've watched was the McLaren one, where they then start talking up and have Will Buxton talking about Sainz and Norris having a bit of handbags because he knows that Sainz is leaving, which just didn't happen.
Yeah.
Especially when they play a load of clips where, you know, Norris is saying, "Oh, I did miss you," or something like that, or "I hate you," to Sainz, even though it's clearly a joke. And I think we could quite clearly see in real time that nothing had really changed in terms of what their relationship was like. But for me, what I really don't like about it is the order that it goes in.
Yeah.
Because suddenly you've got one episode where you're in, you know, this race 3 and 4 of the season. You go to the next episode and it's on suddenly race 9, 10, 11. And then the next episode, they really focus on races 5 and 6. So it just seems to me like, if you're an outside fan, or if you're a bit more casual and you don't really watch all the races, and you wouldn't necessarily know that order, it just, I don't know, it kind of grinds my gears when people don't really stick to facts quite in that sense.
Yeah.
And it does feel very much like it's being produced by someone who's not a Formula One fan and has kind of gotten a load of people around them who sort of know what they're talking about. And are just kind of following the people inside who do know what they're talking about with a load of cameras and trying to make storylines out of what they see.
the scripting, where they get the journalist and they basically get them to tell a story which was different to what happened. I know exactly what you mean. And it was something funny I realised. You remember in Brazil last year when the two Ferraris came together and there was a big... Vettel got so angry he started shouting in German across the team radio and everything. I can't remember what he shouted, but there was the clip where in this season where I think Leclerc in Austria basically went over one of the curbs and he kind of just rubbed up the side of Vettel a bit, and I think Vettel probably spun or something, and they seemed to play the radio message from their crash last year over the one this year in this season. So it was a bit strange. It was like, where have I heard that audio before?
Yeah, I did think that at the time. I think Vettel said something like, "Mein Gott ist fine," which I think roughly translates as, "Oh, for God's sake," or something like that. Probably a bit more blue than that, but my German's not quite on point.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah. We'll forgive you on that.
I think that... I mean, I was going to say we've got to remember, but at the end of the day, we're a Formula One fan, so we're going to look at it from a very specific perspective. But yeah, Netflix are trying to titillate, they're trying to entertain, they're trying to create drama where maybe there is none, because that's what they do. It has, the seasons definitely have good and bad things for me. I think as a way of getting me excited for Formula One again, definitely it's fantastic. For a way for me to, again, I mentioned about personality, for me to sort of get an insight into certain personalities on the Formula One grid that I might not necessarily get in an interview, especially if it's like post-race interviews where people are a bit more stressed or pissed off or feel like they're being watched by the team, whereas you get a little bit more of an insight into how they are. But I think the one thing that really stood out for me for the whole season, I think demonstrates for me why Ferrari are failing and will continue to fail for some time, I think. And that's their whole interaction with Vettel and how seriously they take themselves. And I don't think that they have a team environment that allows them to grow and adapt and overcome, because they clearly take themselves far too seriously and they clearly have too much ego to make the changes that are required in order to go ahead, to go against the guys that are dominating right now.
But you have to say, you know, it was wrong. His mask was upside down. The Ferrari was worded upside down. That's so bad.
Oh. Terrible, terrible. It's just the whole thing about him, you know, Vettel, I go through phases where I really dislike Vettel and sometimes where I'm going, oh, no, he's all right. But fundamentally, he is actually very funny. And he's got a very quick, dry sense of humour. But he doesn't ever seem to overstep the mark when it comes to being funny. He's politely funny, you know, and he's quite good at it. But, you know, the fact that Ferrari were very quick to basically say, yeah, you can't make jokes. You can't be entertaining. And it's just like, you know, I know they don't want that their driver dissing their team, but that's not what he's doing. He's just trying to sort of have a bit of a nod and a wink about things. And I do genuinely believe that is one of the reasons why McLaren, don't know why Ferrari are destined to fail, because they clearly have no ability to, you know, step out from their own shadow.
It's an interesting point. Cool. But yeah, overall, that I think that kind of sums up Drive to Survive quite nicely. So we're going to move on and we're going to have a bit of fun here. And of course, we should say, actually, it is, of course, the Bahrain Grand Prix this weekend. So we won't get a clear idea of things until then, I suspect. But straight away, the pecking order. Do you think we'll see any big changes to recent years? Who are you going to go for your top three fastest? We'll go through each of you. Dan, you can start. Top three fastest teams.
Whoa. Okay. Well, I mean, for me, I kind of already have decided that it's going to be Red Bull, Mercedes and McLaren. But which order you put them in, which order you put Red Bull and Mercedes in is most certainly at the moment up for debate. That could all change by the time we get to the first round. We've got recent experience with Mercedes so-called sandbagging in testing, or struggling in testing for reasons X, Y and Z. And they come out to the first round and completely dominate it like they did in 2019. So, yeah, I'm not going to commit to a complete order, but it's definitely Red Bull, Mercedes and McLaren.
Callum, do you agree or disagree with that?
I think broadly speaking, I would agree with that. I mean, looking at the fastest times over testing for the last sort of 10 years or so, I think maybe once the fastest team from testing has won the first race. So I'd be pretty much aghast if anyone other than Mercedes really actually won the race in Bahrain. It does feel this year like it could be different to previous years, with Red Bull looking as strong as possibly they are. But it's just almost like maybe their testing form is too good to be true. And personally, I would look at that with quite a lot of caution, really. I would probably still put the top three, as in some order, Mercedes, Red Bull and McLaren. Because from testing, you can't really look past any of those three. I think those are probably the safest bets. And I think the cynic in me would say, knowing Mercedes' form over the last few years, they'll turn up and they'll be just fine.
Yeah. DT, what about you? I guess you're on a similar line with those three.
Yeah, so the two that for me that are quite easy to kind of call are Red Bull and McLaren, because I think McLaren seem to have made the right steps forward to keep their third place. I don't think they're going to challenge for second place. I think it's still their target should be third, and I think they've got enough. They've made enough changes, and they've got a solid enough car, I think, and a very good driver pairing in order to get that. Red Bull look quick, and they certainly look more together than they've looked in previous seasons. So I think, you know, they're going to come out of the gates looking fairly feisty, I think, early on. It's Mercedes that I can't quite get a handle on yet. I was looking at what Toto Wolff's been saying about the car, and normally they Mercedes are always coy. You know, they won't. You know, they'll say, oh yeah, no, these things are not set in stone, and you know that we've, you know, everyone else has done really well and all that sort of stuff. You know, the usual sort of, you know, playing it down BS that comes out from teams. But Toto this time round has kind of said that it's that the car is a diva, and it's toxic to drive, and it's slightly different sort of terminology that he's using about how they see this W12 and their ability. So I think early doors, I think they're going to struggle. I don't think they're going to have a handle on exactly how to get the most out of the W12. But what I will say is, obviously, Mercedes have shown that they have the capacity, the knowledge, the experience, and the team ethos to overcome these obstacles and just knuckle down and go, right, what do we need to do? Sort it out. Let's do it and then move forward. So even if they do have a rocky first few races, I think come the end of the season, we'll see same old Mercedes.
Cool. It's going to be interesting for definite. Awesome. And finally, there's some teams who we haven't mentioned. And to be honest, this is the first time in quite a while where the grid actually has several new looks. So it is time for us to play F1 Livery Hot or Not. We're going to go through the grid, and I want you to tell me hot or not, and any particular reason why. And we're going to start off with Williams.
Oh, that's definitely.
Wait, you had to split the room to start off with, didn't you?
this is basically going to be like the old Top Gear cool wall, this, isn't it?
That's kind of what I was going for, yeah.
Well, for me, the Williams livery is, as my nan would say, naff. I really don't like it. It's a definite no from me.
Callum?
I'm a bit split on it, to be honest. I feel like I've seen it from a few angles from the front, and I wouldn't say it's nice, but it's grown on me from when I first saw it. I like what they've tried to do with the sort of combination of white, blue, and yellow again. But if I'm going to boil it down to a particular racing, I wouldn't really say it's hot or not. I'd probably go with lukewarm, to be honest.
DT, what about you?
Well, so we know from the WhatsApp group that my feelings about this car probably differ slightly from the general majority, at least in our little group. I wrote an article on this very subject, and I ranked from worst to best, in my opinion, the liveries, and I put the Williams as my third favourite. Now, I'm not entirely sure whether or not I agree with that decision so much now. Now that I've seen testing and I've seen it on the move, and I think the other issue I have with it maybe is that when I first saw it, I liked it because it was different. I liked the fact there was that splash of yellow, and it was a bit, you know, the last two seasons that Williams have had pretty shocking liveries, let's be honest. And this is a big improvement. But it feels like they're lacking that title sponsor, that splash of identity that sponsors bring with it. The sort of flurry of sort of design that they've thrown into this, the 43B, means that it does maybe look a little bit more naff than I first thought it did, but I still like it, you know. It's all right.
And quickly, drop the plug. Where can we find your article?
So that's on averagejoes.co.uk. It is a UK-based men's lifestyle website covering everything from cars to fashion to tech to motorsport, like on occasion when I can get away with writing an article. So yeah, it's check it out.
Brilliant, awesome, it's fantastic, awesome. Next up, we have the Russian team, who are American, Haas. Okay, Callum, you can start us off. Hot or not? That's a new level of not right there.
There will need to be a bleep in there.
Oh, yeah, sorry. At least they found a way to get around the whole Mazepin not being allowed to race under the Russian flag rule.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. What about you, Dan? Hot or not?
For me, I'd probably say lukewarm. It's got a reasonably nice flow to it, but yeah, it's just the Russian flag is a little bit too nationalist for my liking.
And DT, what about you?
Comrades.
In case the KGB are listening, we really love it.
Yeah. I'm sort of medium, lukewarm on this one as well. When I first saw it, I think it was, again, it was that gut reaction of like, oh, they've done something different, I like it. Now that it's been around for a little while, I'm kind of like, I like the colour scheme. I don't necessarily like what it represents, not the country per se, but the fact that they're skirting the rules. I don't mind people that sort of, you know, we'll try and skirt around the rules a little bit, but there's that when it comes to stuff like this, where, you know, obviously country's been banned for a reason. Yeah, not really a fan, but you know, it looks better than last year's Haas, so I suppose there's that.
Cool. Next up, Alfa Romeo.
I quite like this one. I think that's going to be a hot for me.
Yeah.
Although I can argue, and I do understand why some people may not like it, because it's essentially the inverted colour scheme from last year. They've just swapped the red and the white over. But I quite like that. I think it looks quite clean, personally.
Yeah, I'd probably go with that as well. I think it looks like it makes a lot more sense to have the red lower down rather than up high. I don't know why, don't ask me to explain that, but just purely, you know, for ease on the eye, I think it looks a lot better than it did.
Yeah. DT?
Yeah, I mean, as a diehard petrol head, I have to. It's the law that I have to love Alfa Romeo as a brand, and I do. Even though I've technically not yet owned one, I bought one, but the finance didn't go through. I think the design is 100% better than last year, but there's still something a little bit boring about it for me, and I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on what it is, but I definitely agree that it's way better than last year.
Cool. Next up, we're going to go for the current world champions, AMG Mercedes. Dan, start us off. Hot or not?
I'm going to go for another lukewarm one here. I like the whole Mercedes admin banter about how many AMGs is too many AMGs. But other than that, it's just the bog standard Mercedes livery, really. Other than the fact that obviously it's black and they're raising awareness for racial inequality, which is obviously a very important subject. But that'll probably lose us some listeners, won't it? Now that I've said that, you'll have to cut that out.
No, it's fine. It's part of Formula One these days. It's staying in.
From me, it's a lukewarm on the basis that it's just your bog standard Mercedes livery, really.
Cool. DT?
Yeah, I think it looks great, but I'm not that excited by it because it's more of the same. So, I think it will look good on track. I like the fact there's a little bit more red in there. That works for me. But I'm not overly excited by it either, because it's sort of it's pretty much last year with a bit of AMG extra sauce on top.
Callum, what about you?
I would probably, well, it's not really second, is it? More like third to the sentiment that it's a bit boring. I suppose with corporate companies like Mercedes and Alfa Romeo, there's not really much place to go when it comes to designing exciting liveries. So it's meh. I'm neither here nor there with it, but there you are.
Fair enough. Cool. Up next, I think it's another almost copy and paste from last year, AlphaTauri. Hot or not?
Well, I'm not convinced on the white rims personally, so I think it's going to be a no from me. The rest of it I don't have a problem with, it's just the white rims are a no.
DT?
So again, as a petrol head, the white rims give me a little bit of the fizz, because it reminds me of the Honda Integra DC2.
Throwing it back.
Yeah, which, you know, as we all know, came in with white rims. It's not that I don't like about the AlphaTauri, but I feel like they've missed a trick. They've obviously got a Honda engine. They've got lots of white on there. Why have they picked that particular white? Because Honda have a very specific racing white. It's called Championship White, and it's got a bit of a creamy look to it. And I think if they'd have slapped that in there, go on, peachy.
To be fair, a lot of photographs from the 1960s are not going to highlight the fact that it's specifically Championship White.
No, I think if you park a Honda Type R of some description that's in Championship White, you park it next to any other white car, they look like chalk and cheese. On its own, it just looks white. But yeah, I think with the Honda connection, just to sort of give them that last little flourish, because if you remember the BAR days, they kind of tried to do Championship White, which is why it always looked a little bit dirty. But I quite like that. So.
I have a friend who used to work at BAR. I'll ask him about that.
Yeah, I always think they looked like they'd been racing for like 3 hours before they started on the grid. They always look like they're a little bit grimy already.
I think it looks a bit tidier than it did last year, to be fair. Can't remember what's that different about it. I think they've inverted it sort of with the blue and the white around the nose, but in terms of a livery that leads to the best looking race suits, I think that's probably it.
I mean, you'd kind of hope so from a fashion brand, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, that's very true. Awesome. Well, we're halfway through the teams. Let's carry on. Next up, Red Bull. Hot or not? Go on, Callum, straight in there.
Same old. It's an iconic livery, don't get me wrong. And, you know, nobody was exactly mad looking back at McLaren having the same livery between 1980 and 1996. So it's a good livery, and it will be quite fondly remembered if/when Red Bull disappear from the grid, or when that livery does, whichever comes first. So I'm going to say it's a hot one, but I could probably understand, given the fact that Red Bull over promise and under deliver, giving their testing liveries pretty much year on year, I can understand why someone wouldn't like it.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. DT?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it looks good because it is, let's face it, the Red Bull livery is a good livery. I don't think it's a great livery, but it certainly works. They've refined that look to really make it work for them. But my only issue with it is the fact that I couldn't, you know, if you parked an RB16 and an RB16B next to each other and I couldn't see the floor, I probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, true. Dan?
Well, I mean, Callum said it earlier on, that you get these big corporate companies and they're kind of stuck in a, not necessarily a rut, but kind of cornered in the sense that you don't have much freedom for livery design, so it's kind of a case of same old. It's kind of a lukewarm for me. I kind of agree with DT as well. It's just a classic Red Bull livery, but yeah, I'm still disappointed and rather hurt that they didn't carry on using the camo bull from 2018.
To be fair, I don't think you could be really particularly hurt, given that they haven't changed it like they did when they put the purple on the side pods.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's throwing back a few years, isn't it? That was when they were sponsored by Infiniti, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, I think that was 2015.
Sounds right. Well, the next team has made big changes. because they're sort of new. Alpine, what do you think? Go on, Dan, you can lead this one.
This is the hottest one of the lot for me. I really like the matte sort of satin metallic blue. They could have perhaps had a bit more of it. I'd have quite liked to have seen a bit more of the satin metallic blue, but yeah, I think if you take away the engine cover, as we kind of already spoke about earlier on, then that's like a perfect 10 for me. But because of the engine cover, I'm going to give it 9.5.
Oh, fair enough, half point. Callum?
I suppose it's like the inverse of Red Bull, given that Renault/Alpine/Enstone is under-promising and over-delivering with its testing liveries. You know, if you look like shit over the winter, then you're going to look quite nice when you bring out a proper livery. But to be fair, it's quite a big step forward on what they have with the Renault livery, when that was just, I don't know, like a, I was going to say like a Transformer versus Bumblebee, isn't it? No, I don't know, I'm probably talking out of shit. Yeah, it looks quite nice. I think I've personally gotten used to seeing rather nice Alpine liveries in World Endurance Championship over the last few years, so I can't really say I'm exactly disappointed.
Fair enough. And DT, Alpine.
Yeah, I think so. As someone who owns a little Lotus that is yellow and black, I always liked that combination of colours. But I somehow feel like Renault didn't ever combine them in a way that was truly particularly exciting. That their livery is always a little bit disappointing. But with Alpine coming in. And again, sort of going back to my childhood, I had an Alpine A110 Tamiya remote controlled car, and that was, you know, in the metallic blue that Alpine raced in. And when they launched their testing livery, I was like, oh, please say that they're going to make it blue, because if they don't make it blue, then that's just stupid. And yeah, they came out and they knocked it out of the park. Initially, it was my second favourite livery of all the launches. I think now it's my number one favourite livery on the grid, and there isn't really anything that I would change about it. I even like that sort of almost sort of 80s graphic slash that they've got on the engine cover. Sort of, I like the fact that it breaks it up a little bit and gives a little bit more of a flair to it, and you've got the French flag colours sort of in there, or if Mazepin was driving, it would be the Russian flag colours in there as well. So.
Yeah, true. Next up is McLaren, but to be honest, I think that was another pretty much copy and paste job from last year, so I guess everyone's going to agree it's pretty much the same again.
Still a nice livery.
Still nice.
I mean, we still have to appreciate that McLaren have donned the classic orange at the fans' request, so the fact they're still carrying on with that, I think, is a win-win, let's say, for the fans.
Yeah, definitely, that's good.
Yeah, I think I'm conflicted on the McLaren, because I said for many, many years, after seeing several McLaren test cars in that papaya orange, that that's the colour that they needed to make their Formula 1 cars. And obviously, whilst the Vodafone West era of sort of chrome and black and red and stuff was iconic and they did look cool, we all got a little bit bored of it because it went on for so long. So the fact that they did introduce the orange was fantastic. But I have to say, this year, that it's the worst orange livery they've done. I don't know. They went that 2019 where they had that kind of interesting graphic on the engine cover and it sort of faded in and had a bit of design flair to it, looked cool. Whereas this year, it's like, oh, did they design that in MS Paint? It's really boring. Like, the colours are great. Like that, you know, the blue and the orange, for some reason, they just work really well together. It's just their application of those colours is just so dull. So yeah, so I'm not a fan of this year's car at all.
Fair enough. Next up is it's a big one, and It's Aston Martin.
Ooh, this is going to be a polarising one, I think.
Go on, Dan,
I'll let someone else go first, though.
You sure?
Yeah.
I think it needs more yellow. What is essentially the traditional Aston Martin colour now is kind of more like the lime green with some more sort of eclectic... I don't know if I'm misremembering this, but more sort of eclectic colours. I think the ones that they have in GTE Pro are the sort of lime green with, I think, orange around the intake for the engine. So to see British Racing green and pink is not really what I would have expected or hoped for, to be honest. It does feel a little bit like BWT sticking their mucky hands over what would have been quite a nice livery if you change the pink stripe to a lime green one. And it does look a little bit like a first attempt at a livery, considering that it's pretty much all British Racing green. I think if you'd refined it over a few years, it probably would look quite a lot different to just the sort of one note sort of livery that it is now.
No, I just had a quick Google while we're here using computers, and I see what you mean about that kind of lime green Aston Martin on the GT racer they had. So that's quite interesting. But DT, what do you think about it with the
Aston, for their GT side of things, they sort of seem to switch up every so many years, but they have rotated through. So in sort of 2011, 2012, 2013, they ran the Golf livery, which is an iconic livery. It looks fantastic. Then they went to they sort of switched around a bit, but they also went to the British Racing green with that sort of fluorescent yellow, that fluoro yellow accent. So it's, you've got the green, but you've also got those flashes of the fluoro yellow. And then with the later Vantage cars, they went to that all over fluorescent yellow thing. So they've done a few different things, and there's no like one consistent thing. I understand why Aston Martin have gone for this colour, and I think it is a beautiful colour because it is the traditional Aston Martin colour, or it's a modern representation of the modern Aston Martin colour. It's very similar to the colour that they raced in, they last raced in Formula One in, even though that wasn't particularly successful for them. And it's the same colour as the cars when they won Le Mans with Carroll Shelby back in the late 50s. So it's an iconic Aston colour. But I agree the pink is a bit off-putting, because if you were going to have an accent colour to sort of, so it's not just all green, why would you not pick that fluoro yellow that has some racing heritage in it and sort of is associated with Aston? And we know from those race cars that green and the fluoro yellow somehow work together. So yeah, I don't quite get that. I think my other thing that's dropped the Aston Martin from number one spot on my list to a maybe second or third is the fact that actually it looks the best when it's under studio lighting, and when you put it out on track, the green loses its zing. And that reminds me of when Jaguar took over from Stewart. They initially tested a proper British Racing green, which let's be honest, Aston Martin Racing green is not British Racing green. It's nowhere near it. British Racing green is a lot darker, and it's a very different hue. So they tested a British Racing green on the Jaguar Formula One car, and it looked black on TV camera. So that's why Jaguar Formula One team was that vivid kind of in your face metallic green, because it would show up well on cameras. And I think Aston Martin have kind of fallen foul of that same problem, that they've got a colour that looks fantastic in a studio with professional photographers, but put it on a TV cameras, it just looks a bit dull. So yeah, it's a pretty car, pretty colour, but swing and a miss, I'm afraid. Now I've had the benefit of seeing it on track.
What about you, Dan?
I personally rather like it. It's not very hot for me. It's kind of medium hot, let's say. I mean, I watched a little bit of their livery launch or their car launch, and almost the entire thing was, we're now Aston Martin, here is everything about our heritage. So I think, as DT's already touched on, it's very much an ode to the past, isn't it? Now, I don't know if this is common knowledge or whether this is an NRF1 exclusive, but I did hear a rumour that BWT were thinking of moving over to sponsoring Williams. So I was quite excited at the prospect of having a royal blue, white and pink car. I thought that would look quite nice. But as it is on the Aston Martin, it's sort of subtle, but I personally would have preferred to have a little bit more of the pink, because it's obviously it's there as the accent colour. Why not have more of it? Just to break up the British racing green for all the reasons that DT's just listed.
Interesting points. I like it. Well, as we said earlier, there's loads of ways to get in touch. So everyone listening, please do give us a shout and give us your ideas as well. But there's one other team we need to touch on, and that is the team who completely ignored the phrase "never be seen in red and green," Ferrari.
Oh, yeah. Now, well, I mean, the positive to that is that we're barely ever going to see the green. It's probably only going to be on the car for about three races, and one of them is going to be in Bahrain, one of them is going to be in Abu Dhabi, and maybe the other one will be Saudi Arabia.
Otherwise, it's just a red car, which is pretty much the same old, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I quite like that they've also gone with a little bit of the heritage towards the rear. They've gone back to that not so much cigarette sponsored scarlet to the actual Ferrari red. So I quite like that, but yeah, I don't know. It's just something about the green that's very off putting. The fact that it's just so bright and in your face is a complete no from me. And yeah, maybe the fade could have started a bit earlier.
Yeah. DT?
Yeah, I'm going to be bold and say it's absolutely fucking disgusting. It's a god-awful livery, and it's a continuation of what I think was pretty bad last year. I don't know what Ferrari are playing at these days. So, yeah, Ferrari, again, are one of those sort of corporate teams where there's an expectation that their cars look a certain way. And their cars need to be red, like proper scarlet red, and because they've made them matte, when the light hits it, it gives it this kind of washed out look, as if someone's kind of turned the vibrance down a bit, and somehow that just doesn't work. So and I'm getting very bored of this matte finish on F1 cars. I don't know whether or not it does have a performance effect or not.
I can tell you that it does. It's there purely because it reduces the skin friction drag. Yeah. On the actual surfaces themselves.
So, which fine, but if we're sticking purely for it to an aesthetic opinion, I think it doesn't work for that particular colour. Red Bull, to be fair, pull it off quite nicely. Actually, I think they've obviously gone to a lot of effort to make the matte finish work with their livery. But I think Ferrari need to kind of tweak that colour. Yes, the green looks ridiculous. And I think I'll also go to what I've said pretty much every year for God knows how long, is that Ferrari will continue to disappoint me from a livery point of view until they put gold wheels on it. It needs to have a black front wing, a black rear wing, gold wheels, and red in the middle, and then I will be happy as a Tifosi stuck in mud.
Bring back the fucking V12s.
Yeah.
Said.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just there's just so much to get frustrated with about Ferrari. And I'm like the opposite of a Ferrari fan. I really am not a big fan of them as a team. Like historically, you know, I like that they exist, you know, but I've never rooted for Ferrari really. But I also do want them to be the most Ferrari they can be. And I don't know if right now with their livery and the way that they're managing things, you know, they're not Ferrari really, are they?
No, that's some more good points. And Callum, the final say on Ferrari?
well, I've kind of just had my points pulled out from underneath me because I was going to go for the Ferrari needs more black and darker red, and then I'd be happy. That and the gold rims, obviously.
Obviously,
I don't know if I'm just like too used to looking at a Ferrari 641. I think it's a 641. The Alan Prost one. I think I'm probably just a bit too looking at that a bit too romantically for what the Ferrari actually is now.
I think the best livery in my sort of recent history was the 1996 first Schumacher car. That had, you know, had the black wings, it had the gold wheels, it had that the right colour red. It, you know, it was a, to look at, it was a peach, even if it did have those weird side pods.
And the nose.
And the nose, yeah. But colour wise, livery wise, it was, you know, that was a peach.
Cool. Well, on that, I think that is everything wrapped up for our 2021 season preview. It is, of course, as we said, Bahrain this weekend, the season opener. So we will return with our Bahrain Grand Prix review, which will be E276. In the meantime, DT, Callum and Dan, thank you very much for joining me. It's been a great podcast.
It's been fun to be back.
Thank you.
And thank you, of course, everyone, for listening. This is just the beginning of the season. We have much more to come throughout the year. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye.